if you add up your coffee drinking and you get like a $7 cup here, sometimes you can spend $21, $25 in a day on what, right? That adds up when you go to work 5 days a week. Let's just say it's $100 a week.
Hmm?
That's really achievable, correct, Chris?
Easily $100 a week on coffee, yes.
Now, if one person was spending $100 a week, what does that add to per year?
That adds up to they're going to cut Social Security benefits because they're not getting enough money from us.
I believe that is $5,200 a year.
Yes.
Let me tell you, you won't. I don't know what the math is, but it's dramatically less if you get a subscription to Cometeer.
Even less if you use a discount code.
And even less if you are smart about it, like bring it on airplanes, bring it with you to work and looking like a cool person because you got this little capsule that you can turn in espresso. Curated boxes from a variety of specialty roasters, including George Howell, Bird Rock, Clatch, and Go Get 'em Tiger. You can have the convenience of great coffee in your house without any special equipment or having to wait in line at a coffee shop. Get $20 off your first membership order by going to Cometeer.com/Chang. That's Cometeer.com/Chang. We have Rachel Kong here as a guest today, but she has a book out. She has two novels out. The first one is Goodbye Vitamin. Her newest book coming out April 30th is a book called Real Americans, published by Knopf. We'll be at a bookstore near you. You can pre-order online anywhere books are sold or at penguinrandomhouse.com. Rachel is also going to be going on a book tour. You can find details on Rachel's Instagram at Rachel Kong. That's RachelKhong with 7 R's. What does that mean?
That's her Instagram handle.
There's 7 R's?
She's Rachel.
Okay. Let me back that up. There's 7 R's. You type in 7 R's. And then an A-C-H-E-L-K-H-O-N-G. I mean, Dinner Time Live, Netflix Tuesdays, 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We'll be taking a break May 1st.
Yes. For a couple of weeks.
For 2 weeks, because somebody has to get some, they got to chop out my spine.
My God.
And replace it with a skateboard wheel. True story. And all our episodes of Chrissy and Dave Dine Out are available to stream on Hulu. You can see Rachel on Major Domo Media's YouTube channel. So just type in Major Domo Media on the YouTube channel and you can watch her make braised duck. Is a recipe that was not crispy, but it was braised.
It was braised, not crispy. It's true.
All right, let's get on to the show. This episode is brought to you by Vital Farms. No matter how you like your eggs, scrambled, over easy, or sunny side up, the people at Vital Farms believe in one thing, keeping it bullshit free. That's why their pasture-raised eggs come from hens who each have over 108 square feet of space to roam and forage all year round. So you can spend less time questioning your food and more time enjoying it. Look for Vital Farms in your grocery store and learn more at vitalfarms.com. Vital Farms, keeping it bullshit free.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Welcome to the Dave Chang Show, part of the Ringer Podcast Network, presented by Major Domo Media. Thank you, Yola Tango, as always. We are joined with a guest, a wedgie, one of the OG wedgies, and the only person I know as the literary doyen, the self-proclaimed literary doyen herself.
Wow, that's so messed up. Self-proclaimed?
He's the self-proclaimed voice of the internet.
Who proclaimed it?
Well, it's a different self.
Yeah, it's a different self.
It's his id.
Voice of the internet, literary doyen. You're the self-proclaimed what?
I'm just a loser.
Self-proclaimed loser. Yeah,
it's true. Sounds right.
Welcome to the show, Miss Rachel Kong.
It's my first time.
We've never had you on this one.
No.
Does it feel different?
No.
We have sat in these chairs watching you
remotely
from the TV screen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've sat in these chairs also because I've been in Los Angeles and we've done this in person.
That's true.
That's also true. God damn it, she's good.
I know.
When we had our lemon darty-arty party.
Oh, yeah, it's also very true. Anyway, we are going to get into a three things, an underrated, overrated Y2K edition, and a how-to menu. But before we get into that, so I saw Mina Kimes last week because she was on Family Feud, which we can't talk about other than we were on it.
Oh,
we can't talk about
that.
What we can't talk about. They said we could talk about it.
Just we can't spoil the ending
is
for people who watch.
She's half Korean.
They couldn't tell.
Yeah. half Korean. It was all, we had a team of Asians with a Z.
Yeah. I was in there.
Yeah.
You were on the team?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're not Korean.
Just a pan-Asian
family. We're the only two people that didn't go to an Ivy League school or the Ivy League of the West Coast, aka Stanford. He got in, you know, we're the dum-dums.
Berkeley, what? Right?
Went to Berkeley, but no. Fancy. We had a very smart team for a show that's not necessarily about being very smart, we found out.
No. But while we were hanging out all day with Mina, she mentioned that she's in your Persimmon universe.
Yeah, she is.
And also, you guys are classmates. And more importantly, she said, she's the only other person I know, other than us, that finished your book and loves it. And she thinks it's going to be a wonderful movie. She thinks it's a guaranteed slam dunk, huge movie.
She thinks you wrote it with that in mind.
What?
Rachie.
She thinks that?
No, she.
Did you though?
No, definitely not. But also I want to say about Mina, she was texting me while she was reading it because, you know, we went to school together and there's some college scenes in there. And I reminded her that she once passed a fake ID onto me. And then...
Armina Kimes?
Armina Kimes had a fake ID. Is this okay? Is this...
I think it's okay.
I think the statute of limitations is over on your fake ID. Wait, a fake ID that had her real picture or random Asian?
It was another random Asian. It was a senior. And so that random Asian passed her ID onto Mina. And then Mina passed that ID, when she got a better one, passed it on to me. And I used it maybe two or three times and then got it confiscated by a bouncer at Rudy's.
But it worked two or three times where like the resemblance, they didn't even care.
Yes.
Did this ID begin its life as a real ID?
Yes. Wow. And also this person did not look like me at all. They were half Asian. And I didn't do the thing of like memorizing
my address.
Didn't
say McLovin?
You didn't memorize their like biographical details.
No, I didn't.
On
no. Okay. And so that was my downfall.
Oh. I'm a little disappointed you never had your own fake ID. Come on. No?
I didn't cross my mind. I thought, I'm an Asian and here's an older Asian and that's good enough for me.
What was your fake ID?
13 years old, Delaware.
But it was,
my name. I can't remember who it was. His name was Andre. Yeah, Andre. He had a ponytail, but he was like 2 years older than us. Uh-huh. And we gave him like $80.
But it's your picture on the ID and everything.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Wow. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I remember going to...
I was 13 years old.
You got it when you were 13?
Yeah, dude. Rite of passage.
Did you look anything remotely 21? Exactly.
No. No. I literally look like my 5-year-old child.
Do you still have it?
No, it got confiscated in Boulder, Colorado. Yeah, those motherfuckers.
Happens. Does that mean you...
I'm sorry for sounding like so much booze was purchased on that fake ID.
Okay, but I don't want to sound like a total prude, but did you go, were you at a bar at like 13? Did you go into bars?
Yeah, that's nuts.
No, we would go to a place called Armand's Pizzeria in D.C. We go to pizzerias. Oh, yeah, it's no longer there. Chicago. Washington, D.C. had its own deep dish style pizza, but we go to like places that were never busy.
And or was it more to like buy the alcohol?
Like a pitcher of beer at a restaurant.
Oh, okay. I see.
But you weren't just showing up at the bar and being like, hello.
No, but then you'd have to find the liquor stores that would be like, they don't care.
I remember my friend. So like the only problem with fake IDs in California is like they expire every however many years, like 4, 5, 6,
Californians
7 years,
are so advanced anyway. I mean, the licenses.
But I remember our mutual friend, Greg Larson, was like, you got to get an Arizona, because when you get a driver's license in Arizona, it lasts for 50 years. Like the expiration is like 50 years. You don't have to redo it. It's insane.
I don't want to drive in Arizona. That sounds scary.
It's bad.
Yeah.
That's amazing though. I remember having to take actually hold a board behind my head to take a picture. Like no joke. I really took a picture that way.
How old were you?
I was like 20. I couldn't wait six more months. I was 18. It was somebody I worked with at the restaurants. Mm-hmm. Anywho, Rachel, you're about to embark on a book tour.
That's true.
How many cities are you going to?
I haven't counted. I think time.
I think I put words into Mina's mouth. She did not say it was going to turn into a movie.
No, I said that.
I don't want me to be like, what the fuck?
Mina doesn't listen to this. We've so far exposed her in multiple ways.
She's still using her fake ID. She's still under 21. She's on Family Feud.
Did she get a lot of answers right? I would expect no less.
I don't know. We can't talk about it.
You can't talk about it.
It's a good episode.
But I will tell you this. Chris Yang gave the most ridiculous answer. I won't say whether it was right or wrong, but it was... I can't say anything other than I'm looking at him from a distance, being like, we really need this. Chris, we really, 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 really need this answer. Really. And you know how Chris gets, and I've seen the look in his face many times, especially when looking at a menu. Everything's copacetic, and we're all ready to call it, you know.
I'll have the liver.
Yeah. He goes very bold. He goes very, very bold into something. And he says it with such confidence and gusto. And that's exactly the same look that I got.
Here's my question for you, because I didn't look down. So I was at the end of the row of people.
And dude, it was so confident. I couldn't fucking believe it.
I didn't look back down the row at my
really
teammates.
I really want to know what this answer is and what the question is. I'll
tell you after.
I didn't look back down the row at my teammates. But generally, in Family Feud, they have that shot of the person, and they have, like, you can see their teammates in the background, so you can see their reaction. Yeah. And generally, the protocol is the rest of your team, regardless of how bad your answer is, everyone says, like, good answer, good answer, good answer.
Yeah.
Did you give me that support if I watched this episode back? Were you standing there supporting
me? No, I can tell you, if they have a close-up of me, I'm like, I start cursing, like, what the fuck? I literally was like, slam, I was like, what the fuck? I started cursing a lot. I know I cursed a lot. They're going to bleep me out, but I cursed several times. I was like, they definitely heard that. And I was like, what the fuck? Wow. What the fuck? It's so insane. You've never been more confident in your life.
But I have a hard time imagining Dave being encouraging, period, to you.
I will say, man, I want to spoil so many things, but there's literally a moment. You give each other encouragement, right?
Yeah.
And the rest of our team was encouraging me, was giving me encouragement as, like, my turn was approaching. And Dave comes up behind me and says, everyone, Mina, Pablo, Michelle, they're all like, you got this, man. You got this. You're gonna be great. You're gonna be great. Dave comes up behind me and goes, don't dishonor 5,000 years of Chinese heritage. I was like, God
damn it, Dave. And then Steve Harvey goes, what are you guys talking about? Confucianism. Joke. Landed dead.
Oh my God.
Anyway, what I wanted to talk about was quickly, if people have not read Goodbye Vitamin, what is the brief synopsis of that book? Come on.
That is a slim volume about an almost 30-year-old woman who goes home because her life is kind of a mess. She's just been broken up with, and she spends the year at home with her dad, who has recently been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And it's funny and sad.
Like sweet and sour.
Sweet and sour. Funny and sad.
Way to get that in for our food audience.
Just in case you didn't know about funny and sad, let me tell you about sweet and sour.
Well,
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Vital Farms. No matter how you like your eggs, scrambled, over easy, or sunny side up, the people at Vital Farms believe in one thing, keeping it bullshit free. That's why their pasture-raised eggs come from hens who each have over 108 square feet of space to roam and forage all year round. So you can spend less time questioning your food and more time enjoying it. Look for Vital Farms in your grocery store and learn more at vitalfarms.com. Vital Farms, keeping it bullshit free.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit jiffylube.com.
your book, Real Americans, without saying too much, I can say that it caused me to think about something that in a weird way tied into, I did Finding Your Roots with Henry Louis Gates, and it never made the final edit. But before we start, he says to me, David, how much agency do you think you've had in your life? You know, I was like, of course, you took your DNA test, all these things. You're like, yeah, you have default settings, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, I'm sure I have like some that are default settings. Like I'm genetically predisposed to wear glasses, so I can make a decision to wear glasses, so to fix my eyesight. And I said something stupid like that. By the end of my journey, this book of life that was like 8 hours long, I revealed, I was like, oh, everything's been predetermined to some degree. Mm-hmm. I've had no agency in almost anything I've ever done.
What? Yeah. I mean, so I want to ask you the same question about this book as with Goodbye Vitamin, because, you know, this book is so much about...
This is to real Americans, I mean.
Right, Americans. Like luck and...
And also Hulk Hogan.
Hulk Hogan, it's a Hulk Hogan.
That's his theme song. I am a real...
This book's?
Yeah, you know, Real American. That was his theme song.
Really?
Intro song, Real American.
Yeah, isn't this a Hulk Hogan biography? I thought that's what we were promoting. Did you write the book on Hulk Hogan?
Oh my God.
No, but it's about luck and fate and agency, especially in this time and age where we're like sort of hurtling toward a world where we have even less of that kind of agency into like who we are, who our children are. But how do you, and this is not a slim volume anymore. Now we got a fat boy.
It's a fat boy.
We got a fat boy. We got a chubby wubby on our hands. How do you, for our audience, summarize, it's hard to like just say, it's about one woman or three generations or what, like how, have you practiced this for your tour?
I'm actually so bad at this elevator pitch. I mean, that's why I wrote this whole book, because I don't know how to summarize what it is. But I think that I've been thinking about it as this book about how we become who we become. And, you know, Dave talked about agency. I was definitely thinking about agency. I don't think that my takeaway is we don't have any agency at all. Like I think it's just a big mix. I think part of the reason I wrote this was that, like being raised in America and, you know, being raised in America, I was told constantly like, oh, you can make yourself, you can make whatever you want of yourself. You can like pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You can like, be a self-made person, man, whatever. And that didn't really seem that true to me, mm-hmm. right? Like even someone who like Trump or whatever, who thinks that he's so self-made and independent and individual, was created by this whole system and like had all of these privileges and is like a product of his culture, his community, his like, I mean, just so many things. So, yeah.
So is that thing that Dave just talked about, because that strikes me a lot, that part of, oh, how much did you think you had? I know you're saying it's not about like not having agency, but you didn't know anything about your family until you did that. I likewise I've had this ambition in my mind for probably 15 years to sit down with my parents who are older than most parents of people my age and just make them tell me their history and life story and record it, right? But like I've never had the wherewithal or bravery to like actually make them sit down and tell me this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like is that like what, that is
what is the reason why you don't ask?
Like it's just not really been our dynamic to sit down and talk about stuff. Like my family, I had a realization recently, which was that, you know, some families are like thoughts families. They sit around, they talk about what they're thinking about. Some families are feelings families. They talk about their feelings. My family is a nothing family. Like we just sit around and we sit around. Like we don't talk about our feelings or thoughts. We just like sit with each other.
But isn't that most Asian people?
I
think it's many. It's not everyone, but I feel like, and that makes me feel like, I don't know, like there's some lack, like I'm missing something.
I will say, without generalizing, I have yet to personally ever meet an Asian person who has spoken to any of their family about anything.
Yeah.
Other than weather, money, like disappointment. Like
shame,
unfulfilled ambitions.
Exactly.
Like that's it. That's
how we could have done better.
Like I would, you know what?
Hold on. We're missing the key word here about what I believe. Without having met your family, I met your family, but I would say most Asian families. What you do and you talk about isn't feelings or communicating anything or anything emotive, except one thing, and that's judging. We judge.
Yes.
We talk about that.
Yes.
Yeah. Right? Would
you? Very openly about judgment.
Yeah.
Right? Well, almost to the degree where it's not judgment. Almost to the degree where it's like, why are you getting mad? I am passing judgment, but this is a natural thing, right?
Right. Although I still take it personally. Yeah. I mean, right? There's like the judgment is, it's so like pervasive, but it's also like still very hurtful. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's real just shit talking in a way that's covered up in cotton candy, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
In this book, what I really appreciate though is also Lily, this character who is, you know, probably like of our generation, like first generation, right? Like doesn't speak Chinese,
is
Chinese, but doesn't speak Chinese.
That's so sad. I can't believe you could be Asian and not speak your mother tongue. So sad.
We wouldn't know anything about that. None of us.
But in that, there's like this difference, right? Like where like there's this different expectation. Like she is. Early in the book, it's like establishing, like I'm American, right? You know what I mean? And I remember my cousins sending around this email to our family one day. I'm very disconnected. Like Jamie is the one who's on like the cousin text threads, and I'm not. But I got this email in the inbox one day, and I was like, "What's happening here?" And it was one of my cousins writing this long email to all of our aunts, being like, "You guys have like fat shamed us our whole lives and all this stuff." And I was like, "Whoa, like." I don't want any part of this thing, right? Like, do you think that we are at a different point in time where you're writing this book about, you know, this sort of a story as opposed to 25 years ago when people were writing these like about like the diaspora, the first generation?
Yeah. I mean, I think this is definitely like, it's about the past, right? It like starts out in
1966.
Well, and it goes all the way back to 1966, but I think that
someone didn't write their book.
No.
Dave just accused you of not writing your book. Can you speak to that? Will you please address the accusation?
I'm saying Lily's part, you know, like as this person, 1999, she, I mean, it's so specific to like this kind of, I don't know, this kind of being Asian. Like, I think that in probably 10 years, it's going to be totally different in this country to like be an Asian person and hopefully better.
Well, yeah, because I mean, let me
ask a question. Is it in the entire time Chinese or Asian people, Chinese, what, 1830s, mm-hmm. right? In 200 years, is it better to be Asian now than any other point in life as an American, right? Right now.
Yes. And maybe like right before Trump blamed coronavirus on us.
I was going to say 2016, best time.
How can we say confidently that it's going to continue to get better?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think we can. I'm just saying I hope that it gets better.
It depends, like, I guess what you mean by better, right? Yeah. But I mean, like, so Lily's kid will be the kid is like the next generation of Asian kids born to parents who had already declared themselves as American, right? Twice removed. Like, that's my niece and nephew as well. Just like who are, mm-hmm. are super, super disconnected. I actually had a better question I want to ask you. Here's my question. Just quick digression from the serious topic. Do you think as you embark upon this book tour, any other people who interview you will accuse you of not having written your own book? Do you anticipate that at all?
I don't anticipate it, but I'm willing to be surprised. Yeah.
Yes.
I know. It could be like the, it's your pull quote.
Christine was your ghostwriter.
Yeah.
Seriously, can we just talk about that for one second as you embark on this tour? Did you do as robust of a tour for Goodbye Vitamin?
I did like a third of the tour, probably. So I'm,
How many cities?
I haven't counted, maybe like 18. More than that, actually. And it's like, you know, like I travel and then I do the event that night and then I travel the next day and do the event night.
I know what that's like. You got to read passages?
Do you do readings? Or are you going to?
I'm going to do like very short read. I hate reading.
Readings are the worst, right?
They're kind of bad.
Okay. Can like for people who weren't forced into attending as many as you have or I have, God, readings are just some of the worst things.
I think people should just know that nobody really wants to hear you read.
Like, what's the point
of it?
What's the point?
I'm assuming that you're buying this book that you are a good reader, a fast reader.
Yeah.
And then at some point you will encounter the passage I am about to read to you. But is there like the idea that if Rachel reads to me from page 74, yeah. she will illuminate something that I wouldn't have gotten out of it reading page 74.
I truly don't know what the point is. I cannot answer that. I don't know. I'm going to read like two pages and be done.
And then
have the conversation.
Are you more nervous for interviews with people who are sort of, because you've seen both, right? When you do a book reading or you do a book event, somebody is overly eager and has like too much opinion about your book and is like just wants to like tell you what it's about.
Sure, sure.
Or are you more nervous for like, so real Americans, Rachel Cohn.
Rachel, did you name your book after the Rick Derringer song, Real Americans, that Hulk Hogan used in the 80s and early 90s as his entrance music? God, someone should ask that question.
I see you have four images on this cover. How did you choose these images? Which one is more scary to you?
The second one, obviously. Chris, come on.
But you have to be able to speak to that one, right? Because that's how you sell your book to the most people, being able to give it for nobody knows who I am, nobody knows what this book is.
Yeah, I mean, I think, so for the most part, at this point, I just feel like, I don't know, ready to go and excited, and I want to do this because it's so exhausting, the lead up to a book coming out. It's like such a mental and emotional strain. I've had so many weird nightmares about it. Mm-hmm. And I think whatever anyone says, I mean, it's going to be fine. We're just going to see. It's going to be fine. Yeah, but I think that there's some real wild cards. I mean, I experienced that on book tour number one.
Mm-hmm.
Just like really, yeah. Just some lightly or overtly racist things happen as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, just,
give
you know.
Give us a little taste.
No, just like, I don't know.
I'll share one with you if you share one with us. Because I remember, without you, I think you were
here. Oh my God, I was there. Yes.
You were also there for this.
Although Dave wasn't.
He wasn't actually there for this, but like to.
Indirect victim.
We were doing a book event for Lucky Peach or something. And the store owner, she greets me at the door. I have met her many times. We have done events together, in fact. Mm-hmm. And she says, how are the restaurants? And I was like, oh, well, you know, me not being David Chang, I couldn't really tell you how his restaurants are doing at this moment. And fine. Apologies. So sorry. I got confused. But then after the event, she goes, I'm really sorry for confusing you, but I mean, you have to admit, you guys do look exactly the same. I was like, oh, you're just going to double down on it. We're going to double down.
Yeah, people are doubling down.
I think that's awesome. I'm glad that was done.
It's just so brutal.
Well, my encounter, did you know that at that same night, she confused me for my friend Miranda?
That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
It was a double. Miranda's, half Filipina and have something. I mean, she's other things. But yeah, confused also, wrong Asian.
Going back to sort of the idea of like things your previous generations have done and the lack of talking about things.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's something that even though we're immigrants to this country, I think it's the same in every Asian country and probably other cultures as well where not good things happen.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why you never talk about anything is because everything originated in sadness.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Right? Like, that's just right. You're here because terrible shit happened.
Right.
Mm. Right? Yeah. If you're not in your home country, terrible shit happened. But there's terrible things that happen in most Asian countries of the past 100 years.
Mm. Yeah.
And almost everyone we knew in our relative wise, was knee-deep in it.
Yeah. That's 100% why people don't talk about it, is because it's like there's traumatic and painful.
You know, like talking to Deep. Deep's like, yeah, that boat trip where like three people died, it's not something I want to talk about.
Yeah.
Like everybody has that shared trauma. It's like, I think that is a reasonable excuse.
Yeah.
And I think what separates us, why I really, totally different, why I actually like, it's celebrating the suffering in a different way. Why we're just not even remotely close to that solidarity that Judaism has, because I think it's a beautiful thing to commemorate. Mm-hmm. We don't commemorate shit.
Yeah.
We don't talk about it. We just bury it.
Push it down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, in a way it's like, so like America is such a perfect place to come to, right? Cause you are given this promise of like, you can wipe your slate clean. You can make something different of your life. And, but then it's also not that great, right, to just ignore what happened, because that's sort of ignoring what could happen in the future and like all these things that even if they're traumatic, they like really affect future generations, right? And affect, mm-hmm. yeah.
But how would you even know, right? If you asked your yeah. parents and they don't want to talk about it,
yeah,
and they don't have really resources or family members that are alive because genocide or something happened, right, so a right. lot of people passed.
Yeah.
It's just gone in the ether. So it's like, okay, like, well, I'm never yeah. going to know. And yeah. that's how I felt about it. All I knew was all roads led to suffering. And that sounds hyperbolic, but it's 100% true. Yeah. So you don't want to ask.
Yeah. Because yeah. there's an element of just like, I want to know why I'm the way I am.
Exactly.
And your parents are
yeah.
like, well, I don't want to relive that to answer yes, your stupid exactly. question.
Yeah.
Like, you're yeah. like,
hey, you, how come you had, mom, how come there's like six brothers and sisters? I only know three. And
yeah.
You know, I remember asking that question. I was like, do you want to read it?
And right. the answer you get back is just something like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. That's
okay.
it.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for illuminating yeah. that.
I don't know, but it's still, don't you still want to try, Chris?
I do. And yeah. I feel like it's a, you know, I feel like I'm not joking. I feel like privileged and lame for being in this position to be like, I want to know more about my history, yeah. you know, and like, so please relive these painful things. You know, like I've never spoken to my mom about her first marriage. Never
yeah.
asked.
Yeah.
Never thought anything. Like,
I'll bring it up next time I see you.
please do. So tell me more about your ex.
How'd that go?
But there's this other... Good God. Good
we'll both
God.
Bring it up.
Please do.
Hey, Flora.
That's like the job of like my wife and white yeah. people coming in to yeah. like just do that yeah. for me.
Yeah. Well, in a way it is, right? Because they don't have that, like, they just don't have that history of like sitting around talking about nothing, right? And so they can sort of ask these questions that, like, Eli does the same thing where he's asking questions where, like, I have never asked them.
Yeah.
And you're both are like, happy to answer.
Yeah. When that happens, I'm like simultaneously mortified and so fascinated
and
by
so
the answer.
Curious.
I'm just like,
yeah.
why would you ask that? But please answer that question.
Yeah.
Well, you know, with therapy, a lot of this can happen. But, you know, I always think about therapy and Tony Soprano and The Sopranos because he didn't want to let people know because of a sign of weakness. And I think you can still see that today, even though, you know, slowly eroding that idea that you can't talk about your mental health or whatever or your feelings. That's clearly changed. But talking about your feelings or even the idea of therapy to an Asian community, to your sort of intermediate family,
yeah,
it's not a sign of weakness, right? It's not that. It's like I've never understood why you're not supposed to do it.
Uh-huh.
It's almost like it's a waste of money.
Right, right.
That's to me how I always disturb. Like there's other things you could be doing with that time. You could be taking piano lessons. You could be improving a skill that will improve your life more. Talking about what's happened and your feelings is a waste of time. So don't do it. That's how I've always interpreted it. How about you guys?
I always thought you specifically, Dave, were so lucky to have, no, seriously, when you were shooting Ugly Delicious, the opportunity to sit with your mom and go through old photo books and ask her questions under the guise of work.
Yeah.
Like you got to be doing work.
Yeah.
And I thought that you were so fortunate to have that. And like, it's exactly, yeah. which is like, yeah. why would you have, this is a waste of time, a waste of money. Like you can't.
I did a little bit of that with Lucky Peach, right? And like interviewing my mom to get recipes and things. Like that was as close as I could really get.
I think we're just giving everybody an idea to Trojan horse this thing.
Of course. Yeah.
If you're an Asian immigrant, your parents are immigrants and you want to know more about your background, your family.
So you're doing it for work.
So you're doing it for work. AP credit.
Yeah.
That's 100% a good strategy.
That is a good 100% strategy. 100%
a good strategy.
Yes. And it's like, well, if you want me to get an A, you got to give me details. Yeah.
It's so fucking true. It's crazy.
Mom, you're not saying enough. Otherwise, I'm not going to get a good grade on this. Exactly. Like, okay. I'll talk to you about this. Fine.
If it was done for leisure, no
yeah.
way.
No yeah, way.
Stop wasting my time.
Yeah.
Go study. I am studying. This is my homework.
My family isn't like... I don't know if this is true for all Asian families, but I feel like they're just not very verbal at all. So even the idea of therapy as like like what would you even talk about for that long? You know, that's right. kind of what they think.
Right. Like they
and I think how I sort of still think where like even now doing podcasty things or getting interviewed, I'm like, what am I going to say? I'm going to fill a whole hour with my words coming out of my mouth. Like I've never done this.
Yeah. No, yeah. it's a totally foreign, underused muscle. I wanted to, we can move into some.
It's right?
It's such a nice looking book. I know. Here's the other thing that's impressive to me about this, Rachel.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I guess you explained this when we were on Recipe Club, and you keep going to these writers retreats that we're never invited to. But like, I can't imagine having like the ability to self-structure my time enough to like write a novel. Is that a challenge for you to be like, I'm going to write this as my job today?
Yeah.
So I'm going to earn a living. I'm going to write a novel.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little bit, it's crazy.
It's a totally crazy endeavor to be like, blank page, here I go.
Yeah.
I'm going to start working now.
Yeah. And then at the end of every day, you're like, don't know if that was good or not. And then the next day, deleting what you wrote the day before. It's a crazy way to structure a life, actually. Like, and I worked on this for over 6 years. I mean, you guys know.
I talked to Minjin Lee about it, and she's like, she just erases fully formed books. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
She's like, no.
You're like, can't you just put that on as a special or something on Monday?
For me, it's just like, just I spell checked it. Is that editing?
Well, that's kind of why I like cooking, is because you can just eat it no matter what. Like, even if it's, you know, it's just fine or whatever, you can make the thing, you're done, and then you can move on. With a book, it's like, no.
Yeah.
Have you written something knowing, like, I talk to filmmakers and they'll say, we knew this was going to be a pile of dog shit from the get-go because the script was terrible, but the acting was going to be good, so it could theoretically work. But sometimes it's the production's bad, there's budget issues, whatever. The whole thing's a shit show. You know it's going to be a pile of dog shit. When you are writing, particularly for this book, are you like, were you erasing anything that you thought was awesome or that you just saw immediately was a piece of shit or somebody else had to tell you that you got to kill your darlings?
I cut a lot too. I mean, I cut so much. I have a whole, like, for everything I write, I have a separate document that's like cut from blank document.
You can find those documents at Rachel Kong's Patreon page.
I know. If only.
Do you use Scrivener?
I use Scrivener. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like,
do
I
you
feel
use
like
Scrivener?
It's when I was like writing things.
Yeah.
Now he's making hot garbage on video.
I was like, blah.
Dinner time live Scrivener. On Scrivener.
Yeah, I feel it's like it's a marvel to me that you have like done this over 6 years. Like, were there low? What's like the lowest point of the process?
I feel like there were years of low points. Like, you should just talk. Should interview Eli separately about how many times I just like burst into tears because it felt like I would never finish it. It's crazy, actually, that we're here, because I feel like every time I feel like I saw you, you know, so many times over those 6 years, and it was kind of like, what's up? What are you working on? Just this book. Every single
time.
The same one. I mean, it's like kind of horrifying when people just keep asking you and you're like, okay, I'm still working on this book. And then now that it's at this point, it's just weird. There's like never a point where I feel good. Like, it's always kind of like.
Have you read it since you turned it in? Like, or since it was like, don't touch it anymore?
No. And I just got the audiobook, actually. They sent me the audiobook and it's fully recorded. And I started listening to it because I thought, oh, I'm going to like just refresh my memory in case, you know, I just need to know what my book's about. I totally forgot.
Or if you didn't write it.
Or if I didn't write it, exactly.
The conspiracy deepens.
But yeah, then I listened to a few minutes. I listened actually to like the different parts because they got three different narrators. So I listened to like a few minutes of each, but then I was like, I can't actually do this. Mm-hmm. I don't think I need to reread it. I know. Like, I lived it. Mm-hmm. You know, it was
do
like every single day.
Right now?
Right now I hate it a tiny little bit. I'm not going
to
say
the dark side.
I'm not going to say it on any other podcast, but like, yeah, right at this moment, it's like
zero overlap in our podcast and any other podcast.
It's just like, so, you know, I'm just like so exhausted by it, and it hasn't even come out yet. And I know that once I start talking to people, like, who are really reading it, and like, you know, once it's out there, there's going to be like a new excitement to it. But I think for now it's like, oh my God, like, I'm so sick of this book. I've been thinking about it for so long, and it's like, and it will never come out.
It took you 6 years to make this. How do you feel like someone like Jonathan Safran Foer that made like Everything Is Illuminated all at once in like 2 days?
Yeah.
You know, there are writers that can do that and just hammer something out.
Yeah.
That's kind of, that would make me so mad.
I mean, I just think everyone is so, I mean, I don't want
talk
to
talk shit about Jonathan Safran Foer. Let's hear this.
I don't want to be him. I don't know. I just think everyone is so different. Like, I think sometimes like you do get the gift that's just like, okay, this thing came to me. It took a few days to bang out and I have this whole fully formed thing. And I get that with short stories. So that's special. I don't think everyone gets that. but also I feel like part of the novel writing process is like you have to sort of take the time to like
wrestle with it.
Yeah, wrestle with it and like learn how to be a different person, like the person who will finish it at the end.
Right.
Yeah.
And also, I always feel like I need some time and distance from something I've done.
Yeah, look exactly. back and be like,
well, that was actually a piece of shit. I'm glad exactly. I didn't put that out right away. Yeah. That's really bad.
But also, you know, like I've been thinking a lot about ChatGPT and AI and the fact that, yeah, someone could probably just write a novel by typing it into ChatGPT and you could produce that novel so quickly, right? Because it would just like spit out text and, yeah, in like minutes or whatever. But like, what is the point of that? Mm-hmm. You know, like you're not learning anything. You're not actually thinking. I guess
says
you.
Could,
you.
Yeah. All the thinking's already been done, Rachel.
Yeah.
Now we're just reaping the rewards.
What's one thing that your parents used to do that drives you crazy? And we now, you now catch yourself doing it yourself.
Oh. Oh.
I'll start. My dad would not be patient with me. We've talked about this before. Like last night, Grace got mad at me because I'm using Hooked on Phonics with Hugo. And I just had a total meltdown. Mm-hmm. It's like, Cat, Sam, Nat, or whatever the sentence was. It was like,
he's
Nat
little. Is a
cat. He's five.
Five is a fine age to learn read.
I know. But like we've figured out, I know he knows how to read these things. Like top, dog, he knows it. And he just was like, I don't, what's, he goes like, how do you pronounce A? Eh. I'm like, oh, dude, it's not funny.
Yeah. My
I swore, I was like, I'm going to be so pleasant. And I just turned into my dad.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck.
Yeah.
And Grace gave me this space. She knew immediately like, dude, I don't even have to fucking reprimand you.
Yeah.
We don't have to talk about this ever again, but don't you ever fucking like,
I know.
Yeah. I was like, shit.
I'm so sad that mine is very much the similar thing. It's just like, I spent my whole childhood listening to my dad like mutter swear words under his breath constantly, just like cursing us under his breath. And like,
what are some sample words?
Well, like for me or for my dad would just call me like a, would just be like, stupid fucking kid. Like,
really?
All the time.
No.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's love.
Stupid kids. Stupid kid would be his thing. I'm sorry, Dad. I love you now, but yeah, it was rough.
I love you now, but back then.
I just like, I would just be called stupid kid all the time. Yeah. And I'm just like, and it's, I'm not getting away with it because my kids, like my Ruby and Keith will make comments, be like, oh yeah, like I heard you muttering. I heard what you said, Dad. I heard what you said, Papa, over there. And I'm just like muttering. I make the same sounds as my dad, like just like dadly sounds of just like,
oh my gosh.
Just like the same stuff. So like, I don't know. I don't know if it's like escapable in that sense.
Yeah. Mine is, my parents would always, my dad drinks a lot of Lipton tea, black tea. So he would steep his cup and then he would leave the bag. And then my mom would come and do the second steep. And as a kid, I was like, oh, this is so stupid. Like, why don't they just get a new tea bag? Why would you want to drink this, like, you know, bland tea?
If there were one person in my life that I could have, if you had said, like, who in your life, Chris, do you think reuses their tea bag a second or third time? I'd be like, oh, that's Rachel Cohn.
Yeah.
Rachel. Yeah, I'd also say.
That's for sure. I know. It's me. Cohn. It's me. And yeah. And we just, the household is re-steeping tea.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth time, fifth time.
Fifth time steeping?
Yeah.
At that point, you're fermenting. That's not steeping anymore.
I mean, I've also turned into my mom. Like, I always wanted to clean out our fridge because my mom was a pack rat. And I understand. She literally went through war and famine this terrible shit. So, like, having American, like, bounty was unbelievable for her. And I'll never forget, like, the day she was getting brain surgery, I was like, okay, I got 72 hours. In my head, like, maybe she doesn't even make that. Make this. So I was like, whatever. She's going to make this. And when she gets home, I'm going to deal with the repercussions. I cleaned out her fridge. I cleaned out her pantry.
Oh, no.
Everything. And I made it spotless.
You did that for you.
I did
for
that
her.
For me. Yes. And she was so, the most she's ever been mad at me. And here's the deal. Now, I have turned into my mom. There's stuff like Grace is trying to clean out the fridge. Like, no, we need that. Another half waffle, we need that. No. That bag of green peas, no, we can do that. It's like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Literally, it's like, there's like two tablespoons of like chicken soup in there. No, no, no. We can use that. What's wrong with me?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. I feel the same way. Sometimes I'll be like, I know that's this is going bad in there.
Yeah.
Maybe if I leave it for another week, it'll turn good again. Maybe it'll go good again. Who knows what's going to happen?
I'm like,
has
freezing.
That ever happened?
No, it's never happened. I've never reversed the rotting process.
I don't know. I you know, the ends of bread. Like
fermentation.
I know I'm not going to turn those into croutons.
I but
know.
I might.
Yeah.
Why am I saving them? For the end of days? What the fuck am I doing?
I mean, yeah, during the end of days.
I had like a nub of a serrano pepper. Like this literally happened last night. I was like.
And it got all wrinkly at the edges?
No, not yet. I threw it in the compost bin. I walked out of the room. I came back to it. I said, I pulled out the compost bin and put it in the little dumpster. I was like, what am I thinking? I could use that tomorrow. I know I'm going to need that tomorrow.
Well, you know those like really tiny cloves of garlic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had moments of just composting them. Mm-mm. But then I feel immediate shame and pull them out. And
you have to apologize to your ancestors.
I do apologize, yes.
All right, let's take a break.
This episode is brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. As a ruthless king builds his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape will fight for the future of apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and in theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
All right, we're back. Let's run through this real quick. Underrated, overrated, Y2K edition. What do we got, you know?
All right, it's time for Underrated, Overrated, the segment where our panelists tell us how they really feel about topics in food and pop culture. The first part of Rachel's novel is actually set in the late 90s, early aughts, so I've decided to take a list of things that were trendy at the turn of the century, and each of you can tell us whether it's overrated or underrated. All right?
We should have only been talking about this. What the fuck are we going to do?
All right, number one is The Matrix, which actually gets a mention in the novel. So The Matrix, underrated, overrated.
I think it's in my top 10 movies of all time. I think it's one of the greatest movies ever made.
I love The Matrix,
It's so fucking genius. The movie is, it's a perfect movie.
The Matrix is incredible. Is there a chance?
Yeah.
Because Matrix 2 and 3 are panned as terrible.
Yes.
Is it possible that they're underrated?
No.
No, they're bad.
Terrible, right?
They're bad.
Just bad.
I mean, I love The Matrix, but using human bodies as batteries?
So smart.
Does that make any sense?
Yes, it does.
Why?
Because we actually produce.
Do we have?
Yes, we produce electricity. Yes.
But how much?
Enough to like
to
we
power
really
the
do.
Alien civilization?
It actually makes sense. Yeah. But there's a lot of Buddhist.
I feel like I have
there's a lot of Hindu themes, a lot of Buddhist themes in that the Veil of Maya. There's a lot of Schopenhauer. There's so many abstract complex topics in The Matrix, and the fact is people are watching something not knowing that they're learning any of this stuff.
Yeah.
That to me is what is so amazing about it. To talk about that stuff without sounding like you're out of your fucking mind is very difficult to do.
Your question is there not another way to just make electricity than to raise humans and put them as batteries?
Not in a nuclear wasteland where there's no sunlight.
Is it just me, Rachel, or has Dave had to defend this point before?
Yes. I love The Matrix.
Fair. It is a wasteland. There is nothing else. There's no sun. There's no solar energy. Because they burn the skies.
It's underrated.
Who burned
it's
the
underrated.
Skies? The aliens or we did?
We humans burned the skies
we did.
To stop to cut them off from the I know.
I think it's underrated. I don't think it gets enough credit for the themes in the movie. The action sequences are fantastic.
Underrated, overrated. Sunglasses you wear that don't have any eyepieces just hang on the bridge of your nose.
How are those rated?
I think they're poorly rated.
I think that's correct.
So we agree that it's underrated?
Yeah.
Or properly rated?
I think you can't rate that movie high enough. It's a really good movie.
I think slightly underrated, yes. Yeah. I love it.
All right, thank you. Next one is Molten Chocolate Cake. Underrated, overrated.
Oh,
Rachel
no.
wrote a piece for Lucky Peach about the history of molten chocolate.
I think I forced her to write those pieces.
Yeah. I was actually one of my favorite pieces that I've ever written because I really got deep into the history.
We ate a fair number of mug cakes after that as well.
We sure did.
That was like a party trick for a while.
Yeah. And how are those rated? Currently not fashionable, right?
Yeah,
what
would you say?
Here's what I will say. Nothing that was ever written that was good, anyone gives a shit about in the food world today. Food media, journalist, criticism. It's like a culture revolution happened, and anything that was good and important is like
great
removed
reference.
From everyone's fucking mind.
Yeah.
It's gone. So I think it's underrated, right? Clearly that your article is underrated. The idea that there's two different, at the same period of time, there's two different kinds of schools of making a molten chocolate cake, and it goes to this crazy time period where everyone has it on. I don't think people care anymore. Mm. And actually, the people that could care the least are the food editors and journalists. Mm-hmm.
From a purely hedonistic taste desirability standpoint, Rachel, the molten chocolate cake, underrated, overrated?
Underrated. I love it.
It's so good.
It's really delicious.
I mean, how can you hate it?
Why would you want a cake with one consistency all the way through?
The worst part of the baking process of a cake is when it goes from liquid to solid. That's how you ruin a cake.
It's in a state of sublimation.
I know. I was just thinking about sublimation. The liminality.
To be clear, still not what sublimation is.
It's like, what subset of, Dave Chang, it's a smaller subset.
If there was
if
there was a piece of chocolate cake that turned into vapor that you could inhale, then we would have a sublimated.
That sounds bad, though. Cake. I don't want that.
Next.
All right. The next one is the Cosmopolitan, the cocktail.
Overrated.
I don't like it.
I don't like them either.
What the hell's in it? Cranberry juice?
It's cranberry.
Is that the Sex and the City?
Yeah. Is it vodka? Is it vodka? Or no, it's gin. It's gin, cranberry, lime. Is that it?
There's no gin.
There's vodka. It's vodka.
Come on. Excuse me. Cary Bradshaw is drinking gin, dude?
Excuse me. Maybe Charlotte. No, and I feel like it was having this resurgence, which I feel is not what should happen. Trend.
Because it's the 2000s are coming back.
Yeah.
Interesting.
All right. Sun-dried tomatoes.
Again, pre-electricity and refrigeration, underrated. In 2024, overrated.
I feel like they're rated exactly the right amount. Beloved by some, hated by others.
Like me.
By others named Dave.
Now, a few times for Dinner Time Live, we've had dehydrated whole tomatoes, which are very different than sun-dried tomatoes. Sun-dried tomatoes being like with skin-ons turning into like
a
leather in oil.
Uh-huh.
Dehydrated tomato, delightful, concentrated flavor. Is the sun-dried tomato rated highly generally?
I think I just took something from the 90s that's kind of kitschy, and I was like...
Sure, you used to see it on bagels, on sandwiches. It was on... If you had like a vegan or vegetarian sandwich with like another 90s thing is alpha sprouts.
Yes, mm-hmm. yeah.
Mm-hmm. Alfalfa sprouts, avocado, sun-dried tomato.
I remember that time, actually. Yeah. And it was too much.
Just like
balsamic vinegar.
Yeah,
a little tomato leather with a big man.
Mozzarella.
There was a lot of balsamic vinegar.
And mozzarella.
Yeah. And like decorative.
There's only one person here that squiggles. Clearly thinks it's underrated, and it's this fucking guy over here.
Just, you know what I want? I just want a pile of sun-dried tomatoes,
next.
Some balsamic and olive oil, some crusty bread.
Okay, another movie one. Star Wars Episode One: The Phantom Menace. Underrated, overrated.
No matter how low rated this movie is, it will always still be overrated to me. I hate that movie.
I don't even know what.
Jar Jar Binks.
Jar
Jar Binks.
Yeah, I don't like.
Oh, Anakin. Run away. So silly.
I like this. I like this that's happening right now.
Me too, Jar Jar Binks.
You should do a Dave Chang show that's so all bad. Dave as Jar Jar.
So bad. Listen, I love Star Wars. It has really defined my life in a lot of ways. I remember going to college and being the first person to buy tickets in Hartford, Connecticut.
Very excited.
And telling myself, this is good. This is really good. It was such a long way.
The pod race? Did you see the pod race?
It's such a piece of shit.
It's so bad.
It's so bad. You know what? Trade Federation, they're not Asian. Fuck you.
Yeah. The evil Trade Federation with like a thick Asian accent.
Okay. Cargo pants. Overrated, underrated.
Oh my God. Coming back.
They're coming back big time, right? Big baggy pants are coming back.
They've never gone out of style in my world.
That's true.
I read something. It was like a New York mag or something.
Oh, about the wire pants so big?
Yeah. The wire pants. It was just like, if you want to figure out what pants to wear, whatever you feel uncomfortable in is the correct in fashion bagginess of pants.
Yeah.
And as soon as you start to feel comfortable with the bagginess of your pants, they are no longer in style.
Yeah. What are your pants right now? Are they baggy?
Stylish, tight. I'm wearing tight pants. Tight pants.
Oh, no, Chris.
Super tight pants.
Yeah.
I can't. I'm beyond fashion.
Underrated.
Cargo pants underrated.
You still rock cargo pants?
Dude.
What do you put in
those
pockets?
You never know when you're going to need that shit, especially the pandemic was almost the end of days.
Do you actually put stuff in the pockets?
You don't put stuff in the
pockets. Dude, gauze tape, pair of scissors.
Really?
Yeah.
Scissors seem dangerous.
Star Wars Episode 1 Phantom Menace DVD. Just anything. Anything.
Next.
All right. CDs and DVDs.
I can tell you right now, in my trunk, I've been trying to move stuff from home to the office just to unload all the junk.
We've noticed.
I used to have a prodigious CD collection. I think Ying's even seen some of it.
Wow.
Over 1,000+. I don't even know how many. I don't know what to do because I'm like, part of me is like,
in their jewel cases, or did you put them into like little sleeves? Yeah.
And I have some of the jewel cases, but I was like, number one, I don't even know where I'd buy a CD player. Number two, I'm sure even if I put it in the CD player, it would be like, skip, right?
Yeah. That's
what am I going to do with this? And nobody has, and I even had Laserdisc, the mini Laserdisc. You do?
A regular, like that you play music on?
Well, it's in Eli's little studio space. So you could give them to us.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I have so many. But also,
the Honda Fit takes CDs. So I'm jamming along to some CDs. Here's where the Asian comes out of me too.
Part of me was like, but if I hold on to it, it could retain value somehow.
Dave, that's the AOL CD. Yeah. That's what my parents did. They just held on to all those AOL CDs.
Is that worth a ton of money?
You know those?
Well, they are worth money now?
Yeah. No,
are they?
If you're everything, anything and everything that's in its original box is worth something.
Well, they didn't really have a box. They use them as coaster. You know those like AOL?
Yeah, they would just give you free AOL all the time.
So I can't. I have tons of DVDs and I can't give it up. There's too much of my life. And for those that know, like you would have a CD player and you put it on the top of your dash when you're driving. Mm-hmm, and so stupid.
Let me give you a helpful tip from my world on how you can get rid of those, because this has happened to us. My father-in-law, my wife asked for, has always wanted one of those like free libraries in front of our house.
Right. Yes.
You know?
Oh.
And my father-in-law built her one.
Yeah. What library?
Those free libraries. Take a book, whatever. My father-in-law built one out of fucking redwood.
It's
incredible.
It could house someone.
Butch built this thing.
Butch built it.
It's become a robust community point. However, the first fucking day we set it up outside, it was just chock-a-block full of some asshole's old DVDs.
Were they good?
They weren't good.
Was it Matrix?
Like Reno 911 Season 4, Disc 2. Just like a fucking ton of these things. I also noticed
it was
Dave. That's when you get rid of them. Like, stick them in
Dave was like,
free
little
library.
Free library, what?
I'm going to give you all of these.
Where's
CDs.
That?
Yeah.
Richard Kong's going to be like, how many fucking Allman Brothers CDs does this guy have?
He's got the same albums.
16 different versions of the same album? What the fuck?
It is a flaw, though, the scratches, right? Like, it's not, once you have a scratched up CD, it's fucked.
Toast.
Yeah.
All right, next.
So. All right, this is more from the culinary world. Foams.
Underrated.
Yeah.
Underrated.
Overrated for me.
Why overrated? You don't like the taste of a foam.
I don't like the sensation of a foam.
Are you about to defend foams from a non-foam perspective?
I don't have to, because that's like defending, you know, the laws of gravity.
Do you like the?
I do.
Just like a cheese foam, a foam of.
Listen,
sauce.
The way I feel about foam is like is like when I see somebody that has a like a very very high degree of taste in modern art, and I look at them like, I don't know what the fuck you're looking at. And I'm sure when everyone else looks at me talking about foams and other high-end tech, high haute cuisine topics, they're like, what the fuck are you talking about? Mm. But the reality is, what I appreciate about foams is the science of it, right? And people eat foams all the time. Ice cream is a foam. Bread is a foam.
Right.
So you
can't...
Well,
if those count, then I like foam.
There you go.
There you go. I don't like foam. In the mouth.
That's what I was asking. It's just like Rachel saying, I don't like the little cloud of foam on
little
my plate.
Little bubbly clusters.
Are you saying you like the idea of a foam as...
I think you cannot remove that from the idea of foam. You can't.
It's all
connected.
I haven't seen a foam other than bread and
ice cream.
I haven't seen a foam for a long time.
It's going to come back.
I don't like foamy coffee drinks. I'll just say that.
Oh, interesting.
Not into coffee.
Maybe
not into milk foam.
Dave has foam in his cargo pockets.
He just fills it with foam.
All right, let's take a break. All right, guys, we're going to do a quick how to menu. Kopitiam in New York City. How to menu, where our panelists take a menu from a restaurant and put together a hypothetical order. Today's restaurant is Kopitiam in New York's Lower East Side, which Google Maps describes as a smaller counter restaurant for sweet and savory Malaysian dishes, plus breakfast items, coffees and teas, a late brunch for two, $45 before tax and tip and fees.
$45.
This is really an
tax and
ode
tip.
To Mrs. Fried Banana over here.
Hmm.
Oh.
That was a good one. That was one of the best restaurants.
Still make that.
It's so good.
$45 brunch for two.
We're making up a menu.
We're making up our, I think we're each making our own individual menus, right?
Yep. Two people?
What we would
two
order. People.
Yeah, for 45 bucks.
Oh my God. I love this restaurant.
Have you been here?
No.
It's actually good. Most Malaysian restaurants, people think they're good because they just don't encounter Malaysian food that much.
But this is actually
And they're
good.
Actually not that good, but this place is actually good. It's for two people?
For two people.
Okay.
You gotta get drinks here. That's the fucking problem. Oh, I'm at $41. This sucks.
I'm at $44.50.
God damn, Rachel. We're not,
this doesn't count drinks, right?
Well, I put a drink in.
I think drinks should count towards the total.
This has turned into me this most stressful I've had all week, and I've had a stressful week.
Okay, I got 50 exactly. I'm done.
We're 50 or 45?
Oh.
45.
Oh, damn it. Shit, Rachel. I subtract. All Only right. one of us will drink.
The three of us have to eat together.
You guys done?
I think I have to kill all my drinks. All right, fine.
Okay, Chris, go.
Mine is so boring. I'm so disappointed. I fucking object to $45. You can't get out of here for $45 for two people. I have no drinks on mine at all. And mine is just mine is the guy who goes into like a real Thai restaurant and orders pad Thai is basically my order here. This is what I'm doing here. And this is going to be like some basic bitch shit. Char kway teow, nasi lemak, and an oyster omelet. And that's $42.50.
Whoa.
I skipped all sweets and I skipped all drinks.
Those are good though.
I'll go. I think it's important to note that, you know, said a late brunch for two. Not lunch, it's not dinner. I think if it's brunch, and particularly being Malaysian, you can't do this without getting some kind of tea. Mm. And that is, having been to Malaysia, that is like the social gathering lubricant, what you do. It's also in Hong Kong, very similar to the hot weather climates. So you have to get tea. It doesn't always have to be hot, it'd be cold tea. So I'm going to go with the teh tarik, which is the hand-pulled Malaysian black tea with condensed milk, iced. And then I'm going to go with the bek kopi, hot, white coffee with condensed milk. And then I'm going to go with the kaya butter toast, because butter toast is like like 25 years ago, it wasn't even a thing. Hmm. And you start to see, you do see it again in hot weather climates where they drink tea. So, and there's a variety of those kinds of toasts, but it started with kaya butter toast, and there was pandan butter toast, but I'm going to get the OG, which is the kaya butter toast, which is fucking delicious and not good for you at all. A curry puff that we can split. A pandan chicken, right? Because there's three of them.
Uh-huh. Oh.
And that's wrapped with aromatic pandan leaves, cilantro, sweet chili sauce. And I'm also going to get something sweet. And that's going to be the Kui Lapis, two slices of 1,000-layer cinnamon butter cake, $4.25.
Wow.
And one more.
How did you get so much?
I'm going to get the lobak, two deep-fried, five-spice pork rolls wrapped in bean curd sheets, cilantro, sweet chili oil, at $44.25.
Wow.
I read the assignment.
I have never been so out-ordered in my life.
Yeah. That sounds really good. I approve of that order.
I've never experienced being this out ordered. It's just like I should just leave this restaurant with my tail between my legs. Yeah. I was just
Well, we have to go all together.
Straight dominated. Rachel.
So I have teh tarik also, because I mean just the tea or coffee, you have to get it. It's so good. It has condensed so we
Cold
have one.
Hot.
We're gonna share it. It's hot just because like when they're pulling the tea, whatever. That's how they cool it down. So it's like it's hot, but it's not too hot. I guess I leaned more into the lunch versus the breakfast aspect. So put in a nasi lemak because it's just classic. And that feels like more, it's more brunchy. It's breakfast, but it's like,
can
it's
you explain
very savory.
To the audience what nasi lemak
it's is? It's like a coconut rice with an egg and then with a bunch of like little spicy things.
And dried fish and peanuts.
Dried fish, peanuts. It's so good.
Can I also say, because I would eat a lot of it and when I was traveling in Australia, thinking that it was a healthy breakfast. It is not a healthy breakfast whatsoever.
Well.
It's so bad for you.
It's generally.
Just because it's coconut milk, you're saying?
Fat.
It's coconut fat. Yeah. But it's delicious.
But it generally does it generally come unmixed and then you sort of mix it?
Yeah. And it's either like in a banana leaf, like you can just buy it as this parcel, or you can go to one of these like street buffets and get it on a plate. Yeah. So nasi lemak, I got a fishball soup, which seems boring, but is so delicious. I have gotten it here and it's like just really good. It's like not, it's like just like a level above like a Chinese fishball soup because it has like these like Malaysian accoutrements. I got a lobak also because my mom's family actually makes these and they're so good. Like you dip them, it's like a crispy roll and you dip it into this chili, sweet chili sauce. It's so good. My grandma makes it super well. I got belacan chicken wings because you got to have some.
Very stinky.
Yeah.
And delicious.
You got to have some shrimp paste.
Fermented fish paste.
That's it. $44.50.
I just want to say, if you are looking around, if you're seeing this restaurant and you've made my order and you look around at the people next to you and what they've done,
I think
you should just leave. You should really just leave. You're taking up.
Can I just say what happened with Chris?
You're taking up space in this restaurant.
Chris ordered like a Karen.
I care. No, that's the thing. I'm saying if you're like wondering who in the room is a Karen, like it's you.
Oh, that Bella Chan. It's stinky.
I just want to say you're taking up space that a better eater could be occupying. You should, once your food arrives, you should say, actually, very politely, you should just say, listen, I've made a mistake. Could you please just bring me some to-go boxes? I'll be taking my meal to go. I'll be eating over on the corner. I apologize. I'm really sorry. I don't deserve this seat. Please give it to a more deserving person.
It's okay.
And you say to your dining companion, just like, we're getting the fuck out of here.
Listen,
Chris, we didn't do this right.
I don't know if that's, you know, I think that we're going to give it to our guest for the win. She is Malaysian Chinese, by the way. And she's made some delicious Malaysian Chinese recipes for a recipe club. And Chris Ying doesn't even count.
I want to
pay big respect to the literary doyen. Thank you for coming on the show. You win How to Menu, and we can celebrate in the suffering and what do we call it? Schopenhauer of Chris Ying's poor
Schadenfreude. Yeah, everyone can
sublimation.
Laugh at me. Yeah, sublimate. Sublimate me.
He's becoming a vapor as we speak.
I am vaporizing. I am just so embarrassed.
Go
check out. What are you doing, you idiot?
Go check out Rachel Kong's Instagram. So you're going to get updates on her travels for the book tour at 7 R's. Then
Rachel Kong.
Rachel Kong. And you should pre-order this fantastic book by our good friend and one of the great authors of our generation. There, I said it.
Yeah, goddamn right.
You better fucking buy it, motherfucker.
People who come on this podcast, literary people, have good luck, Rachel. I just wanted to say. And high expectations.
So Andrews has to win a Pulitzer.
He's got to win something big. Hua won the Pulitzer.
Yeah.
Because we told him he had to.
Mm-hmm. You said that on the podcast?
We did.
Mm-hmm. You're handicapped.
We told
Very
him, like,
tiger
you,
parent of
well,
you.
I know.
Yeah.
We said, Hua, if you don't win the Pulitzer.
It's an amazing book.
Not one of those mid-tier awards. The Pulitzer.
Yeah. National Book Critics Circle.
That's the only one the immigrant parents know.
That's it. That's right. If your parents don't know it by name, then it doesn't count.
Yeah.
Rachel, we expect a lot from you.
Yeah.
You're one of our...
Don't ruin our record.
Our best and brightest. Mm-hmm. Your first round draft
pick. I'll be demoted from doyen.
Yeah.
just literary whatever.
To literally dum-dum.
Dum-dum.
Former literary doyen.
Current dum-dum.
Give us five stars.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.